Chris Light. Reverend Husband Chris asked that I commence and close the service. During the next hour, we will hear from several of Deborah's family members, friends, and students who will share their remembrances of Deborah and how she touched their lives. We'll also hear some of Deborah's favorite music, including performances by several of her students. At the end of this service, there will be snacks and refreshments. Deborah would definitely approve. So everyone can greet Deborah's family, each other, and share their remembrances of Deborah. Deborah's untimely and sudden passing is difficult to comprehend and accept. She was always so full of energy and enthusiasm and ready to share these with others. She also strived to learn and improve her skills in everything that she put her mind and hand to. And I think nearly everyone who knew Deborah would agree. She found her greatest pleasure in engaging and communicating with everyone in her life, family, friends, colleagues, students, and new acquaintances who had become her friends. We all feel sadness and the loss of Deborah no longer directly sharing herself with us. However, in keeping with Deborah's approach to life, Chris and Deborah's family have asked that we recall her special qualities and that this service focus on what she brought to each of us. Deborah touched each of us in her special way. If we keep these memories and try in our own way to share her enthusiasm and passion with others, she will always be with us. With so many of us gathered here and many others who are unable to be here today, it's obvious Deborah touched many lives. While several of Deborah's family and friends will be offering their recollections of Deborah today, Chris asked that I take a few moments to highlight some portions of her life that all of us might not be as familiar with. As Deborah's father, Bruce Miller, was completing 26 years in the Air Force, he and his wife, Mildred, gave birth in 1952 to their fourth child, Deborah, at Travis Air Force Base. Deborah grew up in Vacaville with her three siblings, Phil, Rick, and Sada Anand, and from what I hear, was showered with love by her whole family. When Deborah began showing interest in music during grade school, her father traded in a car for a spinet piano. She began taking piano lessons with a piano teacher who had accompanied silent movies and had a ring on every finger. While she attended Vacaville High School, Deborah became a member of the Masonic-sponsored Order of Job's Daughters and was elected honored queen before she graduated from high school. Heading off to college at Sac State, she intended to use her lyrical soprano voice to become a voice major, but her passion for piano triumphed. Deborah worked part-time to pay for her schooling and eventually graduated in 1979 from Sacramento State with a Bachelor of Arts degree in music performance. She had various jobs after college, including telemarketer, electronic salesperson, data processing assistant, accountant, even pizza maker. In 1989, Deborah started working for a financial planning firm, where she worked for over 20 years and developed much of the financial acumen, which she was very proud of. Through all these jobs, Deborah's passion in life was teaching music. She initially started teaching piano on a part-time basis right out of college. However, this part-time job gradually turned into a full-time career, spanning over 30 years and many hundreds of students. At times, her work schedule was nearly legendary, balancing her full-time day job at Gasper Financial with her other job, teaching piano to dozens of students each week. In 1992, Deborah moved to Gold River and focused more strongly on her financial services job and piano teaching career. I first met Deborah in 2002 when my daughter Olivia began taking piano lessons from her. Deborah always enjoyed electronics and computers, and I recall after one of Olivia's lessons, Deborah enthusiastically showing off her new laptop and telling me how she was learning to use Microsoft Outlook and Microsoft Access to help in scheduling her piano classes. As it turned out, at that time, a very dear friend of mine and a coworker, Chris Allen, had recently half-jokingly said to let him know if I came across a good dating prospect for him. Given Chris's expertise in computer systems and Deborah's similar interest in related to her computer and Deborah's passion for music and Chris's being an accomplished cellist, my wife Cindy and I started thinking Deborah and Chris shared interests in music and computers might make for a good match. However, both Deborah and Chris were reluctant to go on a blind date, so Cindy and I joined them on a double date at El Forno Clasico in Gold River. Well, apparently it was a pretty darn good match. Deborah and Chris hit it off immediately, and they decided to marry a year and a half later in the summer of 2004. This was somewhat of a surprise to many, as Deborah had often declared she was unlikely to ever marry, and Chris's family and friends never thought he would leave the community in Davis where he had grown up. without being too cliche, it just goes to show that people will do a lot for love. In October 2004, they held their marriage ceremony in the beautiful backyard of the new house in Gold River that they purchased together. It turned out that their concern that their cats and dogs might have some difficulties living together were unfounded, and they created a happy family with Deborah's dog Ziggy and Chris's three cats, Gandalf, Miss Blue, and Spooky. Deborah and Chris went on to enjoy 6.5 years as husband and wife, and all who were close to either of them would undoubtedly agree they loved each other and their new life together very much indeed. About a year ago, Deborah retired from her financial services career to focus more fully on her music studio. She started gardening and transformed her home with many plants and flowers that she grew from seeds and cuttings. She also started taking more vacations and days off with Chris, including a wonderful week-long trip to Monterey in late March. Deborah's last day was a typical day of enjoyment for her, jogging on the treadmill, several piano lessons, planning some repertory classes for the future, a bit of gardening, sneaking in a quick afternoon nap with Chris, and some playful games in the evening. As I mentioned above, and as I think all of you know, music was central to Deborah's life. In addition to her teaching, Deborah was an accompanist at several dance studios and performed at local theater groups, including the Davis Music Theater, American River College, and the Old Eagle Theater. She especially enjoyed her work at the Old Eagle Theater, as well as the various shows she helped produce with Jim Arnold at the Sacramento Children's Performing Choir. She also played in various chamber ensembles, including a piano-cello duet with Chris, where they played at several weddings and other events. Of course, her music teaching was her great passion. Deborah was a joyful and loving person. She loved teaching music and being with her students, and she brought great joy into many people's lives through helping them in their accomplishments in music. Chris and Deborah's family want to honor her passion and continue her legacy of music education. And to do this, they've established an ongoing annual scholarship in her memory at Sacramento State. The scholarship will be open to any undergraduate music major studying piano or cello performance. Further information about the scholarship is available in your back of your program. I now would like to introduce Sada Anand Miller, who will share some of her remembrances and thoughts about her sister.
Thank you, Gary, for the intro. He was right. Debbie was the youngest of four siblings. I'm in the middle. And she was definitely planned for, welcomed, and adored by her family. We wrapped her in a cocoon of love, and she imbibed that love. She had such a sweetness and enthusiasm for life, and she packed all her moments, as he sort of overviewed. In fact, I heard at the burial that she overpacked her moments because she arrived timely late at the burial. So that was a side of her I wasn't as familiar with. But she came into the household of music. My parents didn't feel necessarily musically inclined, but my mother filled the house with music all the time. She played classical music and King and I till I don't think I could sleep without those lyrics. And later even, she was open to the White Album, the Beatles. She could play anything. So that was that was just an energy that we had in the house. And then when Rick and I got to be in about, fourth grade, we took up the trumpet. And then I remember when Debbie was five, we always had this Christmas program. It was a really big deal for Rick and I. Phil felt like she didn't have musical skills, so she opted out. But we made this big plan. We started early with this whole Christmas program. And Debbie was five. She wanted to participate. And, but she didn't play music yet. So we got her to Panama, and I'm Getting Nothing for Christmas. Now, probably you don't know that song, but she was adorable, and she stole the show. And, therefore launched her performing career. So, then later when she got older, she, fourth grade, she started the trumpet too, the family tradition. And then she moved into the baritone because they needed one in the band. And eventually, of course, got into the piano. So, I think music for her was like a spiritual path. The way I looked at it, it was like
something like a practice, something you arrive at. You arrive all the time. You arrive whether you feel bad or you feel good. You're just steady. It's a place you arrive and you devote yourself to. And yesterday, because when I knew I was going to be talking, I invited some memories to come because I thought, oh, I don't remember anything, you know. So, and the ones I remember, I don't think I should share. One of my friends said, oh, you should share that. I said, no, that's not the good role model for the students. So anyway, yesterday I was remembering a time when I invited, Debbie was in her young adult pursuit of music, and I invited her to come and stay with me. She said to me, there's no way I could be a day away from my piano. I said, you can't be a day away from your piano? No, unless you have a piano in your house. I go, well, I don't have a piano. How about a little keyboard? No, that won't work. You have to have a piano in your house, or you have to arrange for me to have one for a few hours every day. I said, oh, gee. So I did that. And I had this very clear memory came back of sitting in the other room while Debbie played. And, you know, it was like a very moving experience. She played her heart out for like 3 or 4 hours every day. You know, I'm not even sure where that was, but just that, I was moved by that dedication, that commitment she had. And then, of course, moved by those lovely, lilting melodies. But anyway, that was just like an early memory of that kind of dedication that she had, you know. I think that she inspired many. And she was able to bring that to her students, not just for the music, but for the discipline that it provided. For the character building it provided, you know. I don't feel like I got to spend much time with Debbie as an adult person, and I'll forever be saddened by that she's no longer here with us in this physical plane. Spiritually, yes, but in the physical plane, no, I'll miss that. And I feel so fortunate that, you know, just before the week before she left, I just felt I felt compelled to call her, and I don't usually, and I just said, I gotta reach her, I have to reach her, and I sent her an email and said, I don't know, this is your email anymore, and within 5 minutes, she called me, and she hadn't even gotten my email, you know, and we had these wonderful, like, these talks, and she shared how, you know, she was really happy. She was really happy. She was living the dream that she wanted for herself and her, you know, in her life with Chris and in her music. She felt like she had arrived. And her work was more to just relax with it now. Just relax and enjoy that dream. And I'll forever remember those moments in that last week. And I'll forever remember her sweetness and her vulnerability. She had such a way of being vulnerable. And I'm sure it worked to her disadvantage sometimes too, but for me it was a gift. And I've taken that, those moments and that sweetness into my heart as, I'm sure that all of you have, and maybe for some of you who are students, you remember her in those tunes that burst out in the shower because she made you practice at a quadrillion times. And then that way, now she's part of you. So thank you for coming, and I'm happy to share with you that we all loved her.
I'm Rick, the brother, and I don't know, it's going to be hard to follow that. Nice. The first thing I'd like to share with you is we had an extended family. And the Glances, they live next door. And circumstances happened in our life that Ron and Barb lost their dad when they were young. They became, well, it was nobody asked, it just happened. We started doing everything with them. We went on vacations, it was assumed. The Glanzos were going to go. We just go and say, we're going to go on a vacation now, and you know, you need to make plans. We would go water skiing in the summer every single weekend, pretty much. Sometimes had to take more than one car because so many of our friends wanted to go. And so that's, I remember that from my youth. And then there was that period when I left the home at 18. Deborah was about 10, if I did my math right there. And I really didn't have an opportunity, except for Christmas and Thanksgiving, to connect with the family. We probably all know about that. You know, once or twice, maybe three times a year, a pool party at Phil's. But that was it, and I missed the connection. I wanted more than that. And I heard, I think I heard from Phil, but I'm not sure who it was. Somebody in the family told me Deborah was running. And I was a bit of a runner myself. I liked running, distance running. So I took a chance and called her up and I said, Deborah, I know your schedule is very tight. You have two careers. You teach on the weekends, but I hear you run. Could you, you know, fit an hour? Could you fit an hour in with, for me on Sunday? And that's what I got. So I would show up down there ready to go. We would go over to the parkway on Sacramento. It's a beautiful place. Probably most people here might be there. And we would run a half an hour out and a half an hour back. And then we'd run to her house, and that was it. I was gone because she had a very full schedule. You've been hearing about her schedule. But I worked on her. And the, what I wanted from that, I don't want to lose that. What I wanted from that was, I was already running, so it wasn't that. I wanted the connection. And I got to have her one-on-one. Now, when you go and have the family dinners and at Christmas and Thanksgiving, you're lucky to get 5 minutes with somebody, and then someone else takes them away, or you get distracted. But when you're running, you're focused already, and you get like a full hour of learning who that person is. Again, it was wonderful for me. And eventually, I talked her into spending a little more time with me, and we even did road races, which is where an event where you, lucky for us, they start 9 o'clock in the morning, they're done by noon, which fit into her schedule. And sometimes they were a bit away in the Bay Area, and we would have to get up before the sun was. And that's in the summer, so you know, we got up 5 o'clock to get down there, be back. Anyhow, some of the things that we shared with each other, I was single at the time, my children were gone out of the home, were potential mates. And I would tell her about the ladies that I might be dating, and she would say, oh, no, that was too much baggage. It's a term that she taught me, too much baggage, you're not going to be able to handle that. And, you know, we would share that, and eventually she brought this girl with her. Well, I didn't really like that, because I was talking about things that were not easy to talk about with just anybody, so all of a sudden, running was back to the beginning, where we were just running and casual talk. And eventually, it was Karen. I ended up marrying her. you don't have time for that story, but it was wonderful. And I finally said, as we're running, the three of us, okay, Karen, you're just going to have to listen to this, because this time is devoted for my sharing with my sister. And you get to have her all the rest of the time. And so if you hear something you don't like, just the way it is. And I wasn't looking at Karen as a potential partner. You know, you're never looking that close, are you? Anyhow, I don't want to go on with that. So much to say is that when Karen and I got together, we didn't run as much. We three ran together some. Eventually, I was running less and less with her. And then she met Chris, and that was the end of our running. Who won out? And as I said at the funeral, Chris, that was the happiest time for me for Deborah. told her you gotta wait till you're dead. Don't accept anything less than the real deal. And I think she found it. And I'm so happy, even if it was short, it was really nice to have you as a brother. Thank you.
Enjoyed it, and she enjoyed playing it, and she enjoyed listening to it. And back then she had a saying, she probably still has it, back then, when she really got excited about hearing something, she'd say, "Hot damn." So she really liked Bill Posh. I remember after we graduated from college, I kind of lost touch with her, but I did get a chance to see her play at the Eagle Theater, and I remember marveling how professional she sounded and how accomplished she was. Wow! Because I remember back when we were all struggling and just trying to get through it for the classes. She was just absolutely wonderful show. So. Really, really, really enjoyed knowing her. And there's something I like to think of when I, whenever you lose, friends and family, I like to think of a verse from a well-known song that I've known since I was a little kid. If you get there before I do, tell all my friends I'm coming too. And so, Debbie, you better be waiting for us. We got big hugs for you. So.
My name is Jerry Gasper. I'm with Gasper and Gasper Financial Advisors. And I met Deborah in 1989. I've come to the conclusion that cut it out, Phil. It was time to hire a second employee, and Phyllis had mentioned that her sister might be interested. I remember thinking, what the heck? My first experience with a Miller had been so outstanding that maybe I'd get lucky and Deborah would be another Phyllis. Well, as it turned out, Deborah was one of a kind. That's not to say I didn't get lucky. She was an excellent employee. So we worked together for 20 years, actually over 20 years. And during that time, Deborah mastered a lot of difficult tasks. She started as a manager for our marketing effort, filled our financial planning seminars, and she moved on to operating a complex portfolio management system that was really like the heart of our practice. And everything she did incredibly well. And as everyone said, she was a really hard worker. I spent a lot of talk about her schedule. You had to be there to see it. I mean, for Deborah, the day started at sunrise or before. She was responsible for downloading all the client data into our systems, an important job. And she didn't want to waste time when she got into the office, so she started at home, of course. She logged on to her computer, logged on to our computers, logged on to the custodian's computers, and start that download. And then, of course, if you knew Deborah, you knew that she was committed to the concept of multitasking. So she just couldn't sit there all this computer training. So she'd take her dog for a walk. And in her father's later years, she'd stop by his home and go over her, have breakfast with him, make sure he's getting his day off to a good start. And of course, it was back into the office, finish that download, and work on her morning's work. And then there was lunch, but for Deborah, it was not a lunch break. Lunch was dashing back home to teach piano lessons. Then it was back to the office, finish the afternoon work. And then, of course, she had to go home and teach more piano. So I honestly don't know when that woman slept. But that was Deborah. She was always doing something, and it was more than just keeping active. For example, she just didn't work in my business. She took a keen interest in what we did for our clients and how we did it and how the business was run. And you wouldn't think that a financial planning practice and a piano studio would have much in common. But Deborah understood that they did because we're both service businesses. So she was always looking for ways that the practices in one business could be used to improve the other. And she also quickly grasped the core concept of financial planning, which is personal savings. <That's good attack. laughs> She was the only person that I've ever known that fully funded two separate employee retirement plans at the same time. When I introduced a 401k in our business, she took full advantage of that and turned right around and established her own pension plan in her piano studio and matched them both. But that was Deborah. It's a combination of creativity, discipline, and determination. And I know I've been very fortunate in my career, and she was a big part of it. But then she was more than that, you know, more than an employee to me. Over the years, my wife and I made a practice to invite our employees and their spouses over for dinner and movies. We had the annual day at the fair, and of course, the obligatory Christmas party. And Deborah responded by inviting us to parties at her home and her wedding, and then Chris's performances at the symphony. So we learned a lot about each other, like our common affection for furry, four-legged companions. My wife, Janet, the privilege of introducing Deborah to Ziggy. She went on to become the unofficial goodwill ambassador for the campus. So I think we got to know her pretty well, and the Deborah that I knew was ever the optimist, with an enthusiasm that you just have to see it. And I think that's why she can move so easily from a complex numbers-driven task like rebalancing a portfolio to teaching a child how to play the piano. So there's more I could say, but I don't think I'm going to be able to. And I'm just really grateful that she was my friend.
Together we are going to be playing the first movement from a sonata by Beethoven called the Springtime Sonata. Deborah is at the heart of this effort. The history of this musical duet goes something like this. I restarted my piano lessons with Deborah about a year ago. I'd taken when I was younger. And it was around the time that Deborah stopped her other job because she thought she'd have some free time. So she didn't want to have any of that. She just wanted more students. And so she started recruiting adults. She thought that would be really interesting to help adults play the piano. And so I was one of the lucky ones. And I knew Deborah for quite a while. Both my daughters took lessons from Deborah, and so by the time I started taking lessons, we had a nice friendship from spending an hour every week chit-chatting for a while, and then we got too chit-chatty, and she told me, "You better go in the other room." So anyway, we got to chit-chat with my lesson a bit. So when I started, Deborah asked, "What would you like to do?" And one of the things I really wanted to do was try playing with another instrument. And Sylvia also is a student of Deborah's, and she knew Sylvia played the violin and wanted a pianist. And so I, together with Deborah and Sylvia, decided to play this little sonata. So we're going to be playing this to honor Deborah. And as I've been practicing with Sylvia, I've been trying to think of the many lessons Deborah taught me. I wish she was here to help me. some of the little things were the insightful hints that Deborah gave me were, let's see, what were the ones? Oh, it was interpretation. It was to have a plan. I never played my music with a plan. I just saw those big F's and those little P's, and when I saw them, I went loud. But she said, have a plan. Okay, so that was one of the first things. And then she also talked to me about really thinking about the music, you know, to focus my effort on the music to minimize my distraction, because in playing for a lot of people, it's easy to really be distracted by everybody else. So I'm really going to try that today. and then many, many other little tiny things. So, oh, my favorite, if you make a mistake, make a good one. So I'm really grateful for all that Deborah has passed down to me, my piano lessons, her interest in me and in my daughters, and her thoughtful observations and insights. So thank you, Deborah. I will be imagining Deborah listening and clapping with gusto on her desk with a big old smile on her face.
Thank you. Sunday morning, it was Easter. She didn't take a break for Easter. Another memorable lesson that we had, there was always the California International Marathon, which is always also on Sunday. But they block off many of the roads that we have to take to get to Deborah's house, so one year we had a lesson by phone. So we got a phone call and decided the best thing to do, just, well, put it on speakerphone and play. And it all went just as planned. Well, 7 o'clock in the morning, there's, for us, being very busy and having lots of things to do between school and sports, it was really the only time to do it. And, well, stayed with it for years, and there would be times when we wouldn't want to go. And we'd convince ourselves it would be the worst thing, and we'd go in there with a plan, we were going to talk to Deborah about changing it, and we were going to do this or do that, and then she'd be able to sense that something was up. It was uncanny, really. We'd show up with this mission, and she would know and change our minds without ever having to say anything. We could not say anything, but she'd just know that there was something amiss, and she'd just change the conversation, and whether it be we'd do something extraordinarily fun or pick new songs because she knew we were sick of the old ones. Whatever it was, she'd just do it. It was crazy. Well, our piano lessons, the time went from 7 o'clock on Sunday morning to 7:30 on Sunday mornings, to 8, and then to 8:30, and then to Wednesday nights. And that was relatively recent, and that was a good thing. Wednesday evenings were a lot easier to do than Sunday mornings, that's for sure. But just, crazy to think all the time, you know, from Sunday mornings going with my dad when I was, you know, 5, 6 years old, and now, you know, me and my little brother Dennis driving ourselves to piano lessons. It's our entire lives. I don't remember not going to Deborah's house for piano lessons. It's just always been there, whether, you know, good times, bad times, you could tell, you know, what was going on in our lives by how quickly I learn a song. We'd either be button heads or just gelling and just moving through songs. It's crazy. Well, that was all through, you know, everything, and all the way up to the end, always bringing up new stuff. You know, she's been talking about these repertory classes for years, and finally got those going. Great. Great things said, great people met, you know, just a great time every Sunday morning. Yeah, well, it was for me going off to college next year, and that was going to be a hard goodbye, but, you know, never really got that chance. Great, great way to go through my childhood, having Deborah. One thing I'll always remember, being a lesson.
Stuart Blaine. I'm Chris's perennial sidekick. When Kiss called me and said that my former boss and his current boss, Gary, had introduced him to a woman that he was quite excited about, I have to confess that I was apprehensive on a number of fronts. First, as excellent an executive as Gary is, I had failed to detect any sign of wings or possibly a small bow and arrow. And secondly, I was worried, as all good friends are, for their friend's heart when they meet someone new. And I remember going out to meet them for a coffee and in a state of well, I wouldn't say concern, perhaps, maybe something stronger. But within 5 minutes of me seeing them together, I knew that this was indeed a great, good thing, and that she would be a good custodian in my friend's heart. And I was quite happy about that. I myself have been fortunate in that area. My wife Cynthia and I have been together for quite some time, and I hope that, as one hopes for all one's friends, they will find love. Sometime thereafter, I had the privilege of staying with them when they just got married. And then from time to time, as an invited and honored guest, I would come and be with them in their home. And I was always struck at how welcomed everyone who came to see them was, that she had this wonderful gift of making you immediately a friend. And at first, I liked her quite a bit for my friend Chris and how happy he made her. But she won me over as a friend as well, and I would call up to see what they were up to, and I would end up, she would answer the phone and I'd ask if Chris would come out to play. And we invariably end up spending some moments talking about whatever her passion du jour was, which she was quite excited about and made me excited as well. So I guess what my takeaway for this is that she went at life, as anyone who knows her, flat out. If she was going to get into trouble, she was going to go through the wall and leave a Deborah-sized hole. And she infused that energy in everyone she met and made everyone who met her, I think, in some way better, especially my friend Chris. And so my final thought is that I'm honored and pleased to have known her, and I will think of her often.
Thank you. Sylvia Downing. So I met Deborah 4 years ago when I was looking for a piano teacher. And so she became much more than that for me, providing friendship and a musical home that's very difficult to find as an adult. So when I was thinking about what to say today, there are a few words that describe Deborah that came to mind. Smart, graceful, math-oriented, thrifty, fun, subtle, generous, and not so much greedy as hungry. And overall, she's gorgeous on many levels. So some of these traits are demonstrated in the things that she loved and the things that she loved to do. She loved Chris. She loved her pets, her family, her work, and her students. So speaking of pets, she loved speaking as though channeling the voice of her dog, Ziggy. We'll not forget that. And I think that she taught Chris to do that, too. She loved Rubinstein and listening to the Kronos Quartet, making delighted noises and elbowing me in the concert hall when Delicious Passage is finished. So it felt like, a lot of times, like we were sitting in church and we were the bad kids. She loved learning about the brain and adapting her teaching and communication styles according to what she learned about it, and adapting to each of her students. So her interaction with every student was completely different, and I really respect her for that. And she just loved a good solid belly laugh and a true hug, you know, not the A-frame. So Deborah was an incredible teacher. Music can be filled with these wispy descriptions of things that you just can't put your hands around. And she translated these wispy descriptions into something physical that you could actually execute and pull off. And that translation is so important in a good teacher. She had an amazing faith in her students, consistently giving them the benefit of the doubt. And she was convinced that opinions start in a valid place. So she used their time and her time conscientiously, advocating doing what you can when you can. So I thought I'd share a few lessons in music that Deborah taught that also apply to subjects well beyond music. Number one, have a plan. Number two, decide on priorities and be true to them. Number three, go in with gusto. A wrong note played with true intent is far better than a muddy one. Number four, if you repeat a phrase, decide how to change it with each repetition. Number five, if one approach doesn't work, look for reasons that it doesn't work and try another one. Some of you may be wondering how you'll get beyond this loss. And speaking as someone who's lost other giant figures in my life, I encourage Deborah's other friends and students to consider how lucky we've been and how you can honor her. That may mean continuing music, hearing her coach you as you work through the next level, or it may mean passing on what you've learned from Deborah to others along the way. Deborah always said that her main goal was to teach her students to replace her coaching with their own. And she really believed that we each have knowledge in ourselves for how to make everything we do better. Until my violin teacher passed, I never understood how someone lives past their last breath and the people they've changed along the way. So Deborah certainly has changed me, and I'm incredibly grateful.
Many thanks to Deborah's family and her friends here. who have shared their remembrances and music with us today. And we all greatly miss Deborah. Deborah connected with each of us in many ways, as a sister, colleague, teacher, counselor, wife, and friend. As she journeyed through this life, she always felt strongly about the importance of family. She believed how important it is to be thoughtful and mindful of others, no matter how young or old. She worked hard to always improve herself, both mentally and physically, as she strove to live fully each day, taking chances and believing in herself and others. In recent years, she discovered the enjoyment of tending home and garden, and she found the special joy of having a loving partner in life. Chris said to me that although her stay in this life was shorter than any of us would have wanted, she enjoyed it all fully, and that we should all be glad that Deborah's only regret in life would be that she could not spend more time with us. Chris asked that you think of Deborah if you're at Starbucks, her favorite hangout, or at a bookstore, or when you see a Japanese maple, or a hummingbird, or when you hear someone sharing their music with you and others. We are concluding this service with jazz music performed and composed by Dave Brubeck, one of Deborah's favorite artists. Once the music starts, feel free to greet your neighbors as snacks and refreshments are put out at the back of the hall. Chris and Deborah's family greatly appreciate your coming today to celebrate Deborah's life. Thank you, and peace be with you.
I'm gonna go get some more. Mm-hmm.